All right, let's go. We got Connor with us again, the Boyack Review, every Tuesday here, 2:30, Mental Self Defense Radio. Connor, are you there?
I am, Jake. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Father of three.
Oh, yes, thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. Where are you at? How many you got?
I've got two.
Ah, so, okay, well, I'm going to issue a challenge. You've got some work to do, Connor.
Challenge isn't to me, it's to my wife.
Okay, well, I want to stay out of that argument. listen, I'm excited because you let me know early today so we can prepare for the show. So essentially, you're here to take Orrin Hatch to the woodshed. Am I wrong?
Well, yeah.
Respectfully.
Sure, and that's something that doesn't really fall to me. I mean, he's got several challengers for the Republican nomination who would love to do the same, who have attempted to do the same, but Hatch doesn't show up to any of the debates. You know, the iCaucus organization and others have been organizing debates and meetings, and Hatch is a no-show. So it makes you wonder if he's hiding from his record. And as we'll kind of get into it, I really think that that's true. He's banking on just flooding people with flyers. I've been getting, you know, 1 to 3 flyers a day from Hatch's campaign in my mailbox, which is very surprising that they wouldn't have taken me off by now.
I also wonder if those are abuses of franking privilege as well.
Yeah, I mean, that very well could be. But, you know, nonetheless, he's I think, banking on the fact that he has a large war chest and he's just trying to buy his reelection. The reason I wanted to talk about it is that, as most of your viewers will probably know, I'm sure they've seen signs and ads and things, the caucuses are this week. Tonight is the caucus for the Democratic Party. Thursday is the more popular one, of course, being as we live in Utah, which is the Republican caucus Thursday night. And on Thursday night, Orrin Hatch's fate will largely be decided, not completely, because what happens is that Thursday night, the state delegates will be elected around the state. I think there's 4,000 state delegates. And then at the convention in a couple months, they'll gather and they'll determine who will be the nominee, whether somebody will have enough support to make it out of convention and go straight to the general election, or if two challengers will advance from the Republican Party to go towards the primary. So really, it all boils down to who is elected as state delegates on Thursday. There's a lot of preparation being done. There's a lot of propaganda being put out to either support or oppose Orrin Hatch's reelection bid, and that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it. Really, the only argument that Orrin Hatch has for reelection, and it's one that he's been hammering, is the opportunity for him to become finance chair of the Senate Finance Committee. Very powerful committee. A lot of money circulates through there. And so, rightly so. I can't say that I wouldn't do the same thing if I were in his shoes. I would suggest that, you know, I have the opportunity to do this and how great it will be. Well, there's two qualifiers there. The first is the way that they were using that argument is by suggesting that if Hatch was not elected, that Senator Olympia Snowe, who's a moderate Republican, would become the finance chair. She voted for Obamacare, the campaign would always remind us, and how horrible it would be to have Olympia Snowe as the finance chair. Therefore, we need to elect Orrin Hatch. Well, I think it was just 1 week ago, early last week, that she announced that she will not be seeking re-election, which completely deflated Orrin Hatch's argument and the primary reason to support him over a potential finance chair, Olympia Snowe. The ironic thing there is by Hatch repeatedly saying that he's this great conservative that will lead the finance committee, what would actually happen now that Snowe is out of the reelection run, if Orrin Hatch was not able to make it back to the Senate, the committee, the chairmanship of the Senate Finance Committee would likely fall to Senator Mike Crapo, who is more conservative than Orrin Hatch. You know, unlike Orrin Hatch, Senator Crapo did not vote for TARP. He did not vote for S-CHIP. He did not vote to bail out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. So if we take Orrin Hatch at his argument on its face and say we want a conservative to head to chair the Senate Finance Committee, we should actually be working to keep Orrin Hatch home, to not allow him to go back to Congress. In so doing, Mike Crapo, a more conservative senator, would become the chair. So that kind of really deflated Orrin Hatch's main argument that he's been using for months. The other one is that Orrin Hatch has been hoping that on his record he could successfully win. So, for example, Freedom Works it's a conservative organization nationwide. There's many people here in Utah. They've been spending a lot of money here in Utah trying to educate voters and help them understand his record. Orrin Hatch, conversely, has responded to the allegations of the many ways in which his record is full of holes and constitutional violations. What's funny is when you read the response of the Hatch campaign, in so many instances, in fact, I might go so far as to say a majority of their rebuttals to FreedomWorks allegations, they say that, well, Orrin Hatch voted that way, yes, but so did, you know, Jim DeMint and, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, thereby trying to excuse Senator Hatch's bad and unconstitutional vote on the basis that somebody else happened to vote that way. I mean, think of, like, a kid caught with his hand in the cookie jar, and he says, well, you know, my brother so-and-so did it, too. That's not an excuse for any wrongdoing, and yet that is really what the Hatch campaign is now relying upon to excuse his many, many deviations from the Constitution. So Thursday night is really what it boils down to. There are many reasons, and I imagine we'll get into them, why Hatch should not be reelected. It'll be interesting to see what happens come Thursday, depending on who's elected as delegates.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, and I'm curious with this, what's his name, the senator, is it, how do you say it, Crapo? Or
Dan,
what?
Mike Crapo, yeah.
Crapo, sorry, I don't mean any disrespect, I just didn't remember. So this Crapo, I mean, does he have a pretty good track record for reining in spending and stuff?
I don't know specifically on some how he's done. I just know that if you look down the line at some of Hatch's very problematic votes, Crapo's actually better. And I know that in many of the indexes that are done and the ratings that groups do,
sure,
that Mike Crapo comes out more favorably. So I haven't taken the time to analyze his votes, but these same organizations that Orrin Hatch is touting and saying, look, they call me this great conservative, well, Mike Crapo is either right up there with him or ahead. And so if we take Hatch's argument to its logical conclusion, we should be denying him re-election so that Mike Crapo advances ahead.
Yeah, this is it's going to be very interesting because, as I look at that Senate race, I know the Libertarian Party, we don't have anybody really that's running in the Senate race, largely because it's so expensive. It's almost like a poll tax of sorts. It's so expensive to just run. And I guess you could file impecunious or whatever for poverty, but then that always reflects bad. But anyway, long story short, there's not a lot of people running. I've been very unimpressed with Lillenquist. He seems to me a bit like kind of a Romney plant. From what I understand, he worked at Bain Capital. He's been on Tim's show. And Tim, who's not an economist, and supposedly Lillenquist is a trained one from BYU, he never even heard of Glass-Steagall. He had to ask Tim what Glass-Steagall was, which is kind of does not bode
worrisome.
Well. So
well, it's the hard thing. You know, people ask me, well, who are you supporting? At this point, I just say, and I legitimately say it, I sincerely say it, that I'm undecided. There are many candidates running, as you suggest. Senator Dan Lillenquist is one. Representative Chris Herod is another. There's Tim. There's Lloyd Brunson. I think a couple of the ones as well.
Yeah, Lloyd's been on my show, and Lloyd's good. Lloyd's good. Tim, you know, I think Tim is libertarian. He just has, like, two or three issues that keep him. And I can't – I've talked to him. I think he's a closet libertarian. I don't know what his problem is, but we'll see if we can work on him a little more.
Well, and that's the hard thing. I mean, in any race, really, there's no perfect candidate. My stance on this race is, you know, I'm kind of like 2 years ago, the big thing was anybody but Bennett. And I think we'll see that to a large extent this time around, this week with caucuses and then convention. There will be a lot of people who are anybody but Hatch. You know, I'm going to rattle off real quick because I think a lot of people still
now,
understand.
Now, hold on just a minute, Connor. I'm sorry, but we're bumping. Yeah, we've literally got 5 seconds here.
Sounds good.
Let's tease it. On the other side of the break, we're going to come back. Connor's going to talk more about this anybody but Hatch idea, which sounds very good to me as well. Come on back, guys. Mental Self Defense Radio, AM 630, K-Talk, the voice of Utah.
Talk to each other.
All right, guys, welcome back. Mental Self Defense Radio. I am Jake Shannon. We are in the middle of the Boyack Review. It is Tuesday. It is after 2:30. So we've got Connor, our local LDS libertarian gadfly, on the line. If you want to get in on the conversation, we're talking about anyone other than Hatch now. Connor is wanting to talk about the importance of some of the challengers and the record of Orrin Hatch here. The number, 801-254-5855. So without further ado, Connor, are you still there?
I am, Jake.
Okay, so anybody other than Hatch. Let's dig into this.
So, you know, the thing it boils all down to me is that Senator Hatch has now, on 6 different occasions, taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution, right? He's going for his 7th term, if successful, he would be in the Senate for a consecutive 42 years. I mean, this guy was already a one-term senator, almost done with his one term before I was even born. So to me, when he's done this six times now, that he's taken his oath to support and defend the Constitution, I think that's the metric that we judge him on. And I think that to the extent that he has done anything to violate the Constitution and therefore violate his oath to support and defend it, that therefore qualifies him, or I should say disqualifies him, for being sent back to the Senate. So I want to read a few of these things. His list is long of constitutional apostasy, if I can call it that. I think the first and the foremost and the most recent one, the one that I find most egregious, is that he voted for the National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, which happened just very late last year, which purports to give the President of the United States authority to indefinitely detain an American citizen without due process, without any sort of trial. This is a complete affront to the Constitution, to several amendments in the Bill of Rights, and it's something that Orrin Hatch has supported. He himself has boasted that he helped write the Patriot Act, which is likewise an abomination and really a violation of natural rights and constitutional guarantees.
Yeah, and like not just in kind of a sneaky way that so much of the legislation that goes against the Bill of Rights, but this is like both of them are so egregious.
Direct, yeah, outright violation. There are many other ones. He voted for and co-sponsored Medicare Part D. This is a $16 trillion unfunded mandate. And he voted for it. He defends it. He thinks that it was a great thing. You know, there's no basis in the Constitution for anything having to do with Medicare Part D at all, let alone the pragmatic side effect of it, you know, drowning us in debt, debt which he has, to the tune of almost $8 trillion, helped us accumulate by voting 16 times to raise the debt ceiling. He likes to rail against Obamacare, for example, and say how horrible it is, and he likes to say that he was the first senator to publicly come out against it. Yet, you know, just about two decades ago, he supported a health care bill that included an individual mandate. The very thing that conservatives and Tea Partyists and such find so egregious in Obamacare, Hatch co-sponsored his own bill that included an individual mandate. He was the lead sponsor and voted for SCHIP, a massive expansion of government health insurance. Again, no constitutional basis. He voted for TARP. This is one of the few votes, by the way, that he says that he now regrets. But he did vote for TARP. He voted to bail out Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. He voted for the auto bailout. He voted against interstate sale of health insurance. He helped establish the Department of Education, something which almost every Republican recognizes is both unconstitutional and simply unproductive, inefficient, and just needs to be done away with. He co-sponsored PIPA, the SOPA counterpart in the Senate just a few months back that would allow private companies and the government to censor individuals and companies with no due process. The list is long. It's lengthy. Some of it is a little bit more confusing and not as enticing. For example, he has repeatedly supported farm subsidies. Again, no constitutional basis at all. Many times when he's challenged on these votes, he says, well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, so many of my other colleagues do, or I didn't want to disappoint, you know, Ronald Reagan was a recent one. He was a great senator, or a great president, excuse me, and you just don't want to say no to Ronald Reagan. But really, again, going back to the fact that he has, on six different occasions, taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution, he has consistently violated that oath. Why in the world would we then give him a seventh opportunity when the record is clear that he has violated, and therefore one can easily assume would continue to violate his oath to support and defend the Constitution? Why anyone would look at the pragmatic, well, seniority and, you know, finance chair, and therefore ignore all these other valid and more important arguments of constitutionality in his record there is beyond me. Really, I think we need to bring him home. We need to deny him a seventh consecutive six-year term. And again, this Thursday at the Republican caucus is really where it all boils down to.
Yeah, so, you know, and the funny, I will say this, Lloyd Brunson has been, that's his first name, Lloyd, right?
I believe so.
Brunson's been on this show, and the one thing I will say, I don't know a lot about him, and I pushed him a little bit on constitutional stuff, and he seemed pretty good. I had some disagreements, but that doesn't mean a whole lot necessarily. I mean, people need to make their own assessments. But the thing I will say that was cool is Brunson did some kind of investigative journalism and went and confronted. There is on YouTube somewhere, I think if you type Brunson and Orrin Hatch in YouTube, a clip of him confronting him about this oath of office and the Constitution and breaking that with the Patriot Act and stuff. I would really urge people, if you haven't seen it, go type in Brunson and Orrin Hatch. It's a good video.
Yeah, and due credit to Lloyd for doing that, and it's something that delegates need to do. It's something that we as individuals need to do, is ask hard questions and demand answers. This is something that not many people do. Heck, the journalists who are, you know, supposedly tasked with this duty don't even do it themselves to a large extent. Hard questions need to be asked. From what I've seen in town hall meetings that Orrin Hatch has done, that I've seen recorded in interviews that he's done, he does not like to fully address and frankly address difficult questions. He'll often sideline to another argument. He'll often repeat a talking point. In many cases, he will insult the person asking the question, as he recently did just a few days ago. I saw a YouTube video of him insulting someone. I think that Senator Hatch understands that after 36 years, and his campaign has repeatedly said this, that, you know, I've done over 12,000 votes. You can't expect me to be perfect on every single one of them. You know, clearly you're not going to agree with all 12,000, and readily so. I totally admit that. Yet on some of the most important, controversial, and significant bills that have been passed, he has been on the wrong side. We don't need leadership in the form of seniority. Simply being there a long time does not equate with leadership. Mike Lee, who I have some disagreements with, but I, you know, think he's done, by and large, a really good job, he's a freshman. And he has shown, in my view, more leadership than Senator Hatch has.
Well, you know, Lee is the only guy that I look at who call themselves a Tea Party person besides Rand Paul who is really, like, impressed me. And again, like you said, I have some things that I would nitpick. But, man, he stood up, like you said. Like, he stood up against NDAA.
Yeah, and fighting for these unconstitutional recess appointments and simply, you know, picking battles where other people are either too scared or they see it as a waste of time and political energy. Again, Mike Lee isn't perfect, but I think that deflates Orrin Hatch's seniority argument. We don't need someone to be there for a long time to become a leader. He has had 36 years to prove himself a leader, and he has yet to do so.
Well, look at Rand Paul leading a filibuster, and he was a freshman.
Right.
So you're spot on.
And I think that, you know, I've used this example a few times. Imagine a couple who has been married for, let's say, 40 years. And let's say after 40 years, the guy commits adultery, right? He violates the oath, the covenant he's made with his wife, that solemn marriage vow. Would the wife accept the argument that, oh, well, you know, for 39.999 years I was faithful to you. It was just that one day that I wasn't. But look at my 40-year record. You can't expect me to be faithful to you every single day. I think we would widely recognize that is stupid, you know? The wife would smack him and probably divorce him and move on her merry way.
Well,
do the same thing.
But this is so, like, chronic across everything in our culture. And this is really at the root of so much libertarian theory. Contract. And that when you make an agreement, what happened to the good old days where you looked a man in the eye and your word meant something and it was a matter of self-pride? These politicians now, they say something to get elected, but they're really serving the people who funded their campaign, the big corporations and whatnot.
That's exactly right, which brings up another hypocritical point on the side of Orrin Hatch, who likes to lambast this Freedom Works organization for being this out-of-state D.C., political interest group that's spending all this money, you know, that it was in a KSL article, I think just yesterday, where Orrin Hatch was quoted, and I quote, as saying, "I'm not going to let these outsiders come in here and take over our state."
Xenophobia.
Well, it's wonderful grandstanding, but it's hypocritical. The Salt Lake Tribune did an article recently where they showed that over 90% of Orrin Hatch's donations come from outside of Utah.
he's just banking. He's all rhetoric and banking that nobody actually looks into even the rhetoric he's using.
Well, and I think that speaks well to the caucus system. Love it or hate it, it needs to be improved. I don't think that as it currently exists, it's just the most utopian form of electing people. But if we didn't have it, we would be like so many other states where these incumbents with very large war chests and out-of-state donations and well-connected people who fund their campaigns could flood the airwaves and mailboxes with propaganda pieces. They wouldn't ask hard questions. There wouldn't be the scrutiny that there is when you're appealing to a decreased number of delegates where you have to answer hard questions in face-to-face meetings. Really, this is why Bob Bennett lost. It's why we were able to take him down 2 years ago. And it's why Orrin Hatch's fate is such that it is where he stands the chance of not even receiving his party's nomination like happened to his colleague 2 years ago. So he's trying to flood the airwaves and mailboxes. He's had a $4 million war chest that he's been blowing through in the past few months. He has a very large staff who's been hired for over a year, I think, to specifically to cultivate delegates and try and game the system that we've got coming up Thursday night. You know, time will tell if it happens or not, but he can't stand by his record, so he's trying to just throw money at it and see if he can buy his reelection.
Yeah, it's scary stuff. We got Frank here in Kearns who wants to talk about Hatch and the seniority. Frank, are you still there?
I am. I just want to make, you know, this idea of seniority is a political creation of their self-worth. Seniority wouldn't mean nothing if we had term limits. But seniority doesn't guarantee anything if we truly believe that we're voting for things. You know, he could be the chair of the Finance Committee. Well, it's a committee. You know, when you vote, if your committee's not in favor with what you're doing as the chair, it doesn't pass. It doesn't come out of committee. This propaganda of seniority just annoys me. I just wanted to make that comment that anybody that believes that Hatch, because of his seniority, is going to be a better choice, has ultimately lost their sense of right and wrong, in my opinion.
I think he's got a good point on term limits specifically. There was a funny article that came out earlier today with a quote from Orrin Hatch from 1995. There was a term limit amendment that was being considered then. This is a direct quote from Orrin Hatch, 1995. He says, "I have strong reservations about a constitutional amendment on term limits. Let me at the outset emphasize 2 points. Again, this is Orrin Hatch. First, I have no personal interest in the prospects of the amendment. Even were it to become part of the Constitution tomorrow, again, this is in 1995, it would not bar me from running for re-election until the year 2012, when I would be 78 years of age. It gets better. There are many things I hope to be doing in the year 2012. Spending time with my great-grandchildren at that time would be higher on my list than spending time with Senate colleagues, esteemed though they are." So, really, this all boils down to me and so many of my compadres here, fellow Utah delegates, wanting to help Orrin Hatch stick to his desires of 17 years ago. Jake, think of the great-grandchildren. Let's do it for them.
Oh, that's hilarious. I'm just laughing at the sheer ridiculousness of Orrin Hatch and his white hair and his orange spray-on tan on TV, and then all these words coming back to haunt him. Love it. Thank goodness
for the internet.
The internet
is a wonderful thing.
Yeah. Hey, I always appreciate the report. It's always appreciated. Let me ask you this. So what is your advice then? Have people try to influence the delegates, get to become a delegate, that kind of thing? Or what are you suggesting?
So for those who don't completely object to putting an R after their name, even for a short time, if
sure,
that's what you choose, the state party rules are pretty lax. They let you affiliate the night of the caucus and fill out a voter registration form and become a Republican and then participate in the caucus. So for those who are already Republican or want to become a Republican, whether just for that night or for whatever period of time, you can go to your caucus Thursday night, look up your county Republican Party website. They'll have information there. You can participate. You can run as a delegate if you want. You can ask the people who they support, find out who the Hatch supporters are, and then deny them the opportunity to become a delegate.
Awesome stuff. Thanks, guys. We'll be back tomorrow. More Mental Self-Defense Radio, AM 630, K-Talk, the voice of Utah. See you guys tomorrow.